James Carrington made history in 1979 when he and other inmates at the Powhatan Correctional Center in Virginia in the United States recorded the first album in prison. James and his fellow inmates had created an R&B group called Edge of Daybreak, and their disc, Eyes of Love, was recorded in one take, because it had to be. The band members were all inmates, incarcerated for everything from armed robbery and assault, with sentences ranging from 6 to 60 years. Thematically, the collection is about a group of guys making the best of a tough situation. After 30 years, James was finally released, and he now runs his own music store in Petersburg, Virginia. Colin Flynn tells the amazing story of James Carrington.
I'm in Carrington's Music, a small music store in the town of Petersburg in Virginia. And I'm walking through the aisles with its owner, James Carrington.
Got a little old school and gospel and then some music that I probably never heard of, but somebody else may have heard of it. And I just get it in and we try to sell it.
James is alluding to the current releases. Jay-Z and Beyonce are among some on the stands, and he's not a big fan. James is more old school. And what would your favorite artist in here be?
Earth, Wind & Fire.
Do you remember?
Yes.
September.
You sure have done a good audition.
I thought you were going to say, don't call us, we'll call you.
That's right, that's right.
I'm not the first person to have ever auditioned for James. In fact, he used to play in and manage bands. He grew up in Keysville, Virginia, just south of Richmond. And growing up, he was always surrounded by music.
My mother played piano a little bit, but she had a piano in our home. Looked like everybody, as they walked by the piano, would strike a note.
James really got into music when he was in high school and played in bands whenever he had free time. But he was working in his local church too and soon became too busy to keep them both going.
It was a good life, but it was very tiresome. So that's why I say I had to, at one time, give up one. And I gave up the R&B music for a while.
So he quit his bands and concentrated on his church work. He would go on to play in bands again, but not as a free man. It was 1965, and James was 20 years of age. He had a group of friends and a girlfriend.
I had just one friend, and she happened to be Caucasian. And we had been dating for a little while. And back in that time, it was not kosher for a black man to be dating a white woman.
It wasn't socially acceptable for the time, especially in states like Virginia, for a black man to be dating a white woman. And locals made that clear to James.
Sitting here today, I'm really lucky to be sitting here because on one particular night, the Ku Klux Klan rolled up on us. And they asked me, you know what we do to niggas that try to go with white women. And I was fortunate that somebody called the police and the police came.
The police came, but things went from bad to worse. James claims that the girl's parents were disapproving of the relationship too and wanted James locked up.
And she really didn't want to do it, but her parents was the one to press charges.
And what were the charges?
They got me for rape.
You always maintained that you were innocent, that this was something that they had made up just to put you behind bars.
Yeah. Oh, it was outrageous.
James has always insisted on his innocence, saying the two were in a consensual relationship, and maintains the trial was prejudiced.
It was a disaster. I think I had an all-white jury, and it was just a disaster.
And how long had you been dating for before that?
We'd been seeing each other off and on for 4 or 5 months, but we started getting together maybe about 3 or 4 times at the end before this occurred.
And then what happened then? You went to court, you were found guilty and sentenced to what?
I was sentenced, I think it was 35 years.
What did that feel like at 20 years of age when you knew then you were going to be behind bars for 30-odd years?
I never felt that way because when you're like innocent or something, you know, you just say tomorrow or next week, my lawyer gonna do this appeal and I will be home free.
Early into his 35-year sentence in Virginia State Penitentiary, James decided to start his own band with some of the other inmates, and the prison even permitted them to play out in public, under guard, of course.
Even though I had been charged and sentenced, they had faith in me, and usually what band members that I put on the list to travel, they approved it. When we went out, we all wore civilian clothes. The guards wore civilian clothes. And they were out there excited like we were.
There was always the risk that one of the band members would seize the opportunity to run and try and escape. And in fact, it happened once. An inmate fled when they were out performing.
They got around the block. They was in a car. Somebody picked them up. And they said, "We can't do Carrington like this." And they came back.
That was nice loyalty to you, wasn't it?
Of course. And that's what they said. "We can't do Carrington like that." Yeah.
James was then moved to a new prison, Powhatan Correctional Facility, which was more strict.
It was a little tighter. It was different.
James no longer had the luxuries that he had had back in the previous prison, and life here was tougher. But James saw music as an escape mechanism and started a new band called Edge of Daybreak. How did you find good musicians within the prison?
Yeah, well, you would go down and you would hear other bands playing. And at that time, one of the bands was breaking up. And two of the guys was thinking about forming a group. And I asked them, I said, "Won't y'all just come on, go with me?" I had so many guys that had a desire to play music. Couldn't play nothing, but we had time. We had time.
The band would rehearse constantly, writing soul songs and perfecting the playing of them, and they became quite good. A local record store called Bohanna's Records, where James had been buying his favorite music from, got wind of them. And one day, the owner came to visit the prison to hear them play for himself.
That's when things started moving. He loved what he heard.
He was so impressed by James and his band, Edge of Daybreak, that he agreed to sponsor the recording of an album. He went to a record studio and got them on board. And now all James had to do was convince the prison officers to allow them out to the studio to record it. He wrote to them with the proposal.
And they said, "No way. No way."
The answer was no. Absolutely no way could they leave the prison to record an album, no matter how good they were or even if it was being sponsored by a local business. But in the letter, there was a clause.
They said, "No way can we let y'all go to the institution." They said, "But if our recording studio want to come to y'all, that's fine."
And did they say that just to brush you off, thinking, yes, Well, the recording studio are never going to come to the prison?
Yes, they had no idea that the recording studio was that interested that they would come.
Wow. Well, they were. And one day a mobile recording unit pulled up outside the prison. Now, this was 1979, and recording equipment wasn't as small and compact as it is today. The prison hall was turned into a recording studio, with cables and microphones and mixing desks everywhere. It was chaotic, as time was so tight.
We had 5 hours to set up, to tune up, for the studio people to bring their stuff in and set up. So when the recording actually started, we probably had less than 3 minutes.
There was no room for error, and with time so tight, the criminals lined up with their instruments, and as the red recording light illuminated, the guys played, making history as they did.
You were the one.
They managed to get through the entire LP, but just about. When the very last song was being recorded, the prison guards were ushering them out.
And the guards was at the door. Time up, y'all gotta go. Come on now. Y'all gotta go. And I was like,
you were signaling over to them, be quiet, shh, give me one more minute to record this.
So we got it done.
Hands of love, take off your gloves, remove your clothes, lest you have love.
The full LP was recorded, but never released. Most of the 300 copies that were made were destroyed in a flood at the record store where they were being kept. And it wasn't until years later, when someone found a number of surviving copies, that they sold them on eBay for around $1,000 each. Because unlike other music that had been recorded in prisons, like Johnny Cash's famous At Folsom Prison album, for the first time, all the musicians and performers in this LP were actual real inmates. The vinyl was then digitally remastered by another record company and was hailed as a true rediscovery by Rolling Stone magazine.
So it's a chance to seek out our true romance.
James and the band continued to play music in prison, and the weeks turned into months, and the months turned into years. In total, James served 11 years in prison before he was eventually eligible for parole.
And your original conviction of rape, was that ever overturned or appealed or...
No, I said I lived from day to day hoping that that would happen. But then finally, I looked and said, well, I'm going to be paroled next month. So I served my time, hoping that I wouldn't have to do it, but it never came.
After he was released, James became friendly with the man who owned the record store that had sponsored the recording of the LP and had sold him music over the years. And James started working for him, eventually taking over the business. Today, James still runs the store, now named after him, here in the small town of Petersburg. It's not open every day, as James isn't able to give it the time anymore that it needs.
What age are you today, James?
Oh, my goodness. I'm 72 years old.
72 years young, and how are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. Feeling pretty good.
You still have that fire in you and that passion for music?
I still got the fire and the passion, but I'm trying to find the energy to do it.
Do you find it hard to get the energy now to play and to rehearse and write music?
Well, this is another story, long, but I just gonna say it. I recently came off of cancer.
Okay.
And I've been doing the chemo and the radiation.
I'm sorry to hear that, James. And what kind of cancer is it?
I had esophageal cancer.
Okay.
Yeah, on April the 9th, they declared me free of cancer.
Great.
Yeah, okay. So we're just going to pray that it doesn't come back.
Yeah, please God it doesn't.
Yes.
And then you'll have room for the music again.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
When you look back at the fact that you were in prison, do you find it extraordinary that you did more than a decade behind bars?
It's like a dark spot in my life. But the mind is a strong thing. If you try to cast that out of your mind, sometimes you can be halfway successful. And that's what I wanted to do, just cast that out of my mind.
And here in his record store, James shows me an old dusty vinyl record, one of the original from that recording in 1979. The cover is a painting of a man silhouetted behind bars in a dark prison cell. And on the back, there is a short piece of text.
With our original music and sound, we have to spread our thoughts and feelings as far and as wide as possible. Our bodies are in prison, but we want our hearts and minds to be with the free world.
Eyes of love.